Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to Saving Lives in Slow Motion. Today, I'll be talking about well-being. Now, you might think I'm covering well-being because it's something I'm interested in. It is indeed something I'm interested in. But what sparked this episode is that I went to see Nitin Sawhney at the Royal Albert Hall, and one of my friends who I went with said that part of the trouble with well-being is that at work, they now worry about well-being and how to fit it in and whether they're doing enough and whether what they're doing is right. And how do you fit it all in? It's a really interesting point that I thought was worth addressing. And it got me thinking about what well-being is, what it should be, what it means to people, and how we can make it easy for ourselves. And in this episode, I want to just have a free-form kind of, you know, conversation, although it's one way, obviously, because I can't hear what you're saying to me until you sort of post things after the episode. But all the evidence-based stuff is, as you know, always in the show notes and the links, and I'm not going to waste time going through a lot of that because you can read about that. I want to sort of actually open up a conversation about what well-being means, what it is, and how we can achieve it. I like to start with definitions because I think people like those, and it means that we have started somewhere concrete. So the World Health Organization has a definition of health, and it mentions the word well-being, and it describes health as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. What's interesting is that there's no one agreed definition of well-being. So it's a word that is used by the World Health Organization and lots of organizations, but actually well-being itself is quite difficult to define. How do I define it? Well, I've looked at so many different angles when it comes to well-being, and one of the things that you can Google this and you'll find something called the well-being wheel. So there are loads of these and they're all a bit different. And it's basically like a pie chart with eight areas that seem to constitute well-being. So they're all pretty good. I'll give you an example of one. So this is one that I found online. And the eight areas are community, mind, relationships, emotions, environment, spirit, learning, and body. Not bad. Then there's one which it goes like this: physical, emotional, financial, social, occupational, spiritual, intellectual, and environmental. Again, not bad. And I think for me, the key thing is trying to apply whatever wheel we choose is trying to apply it to yourself or your organization and to modern times. So comparing those two, the second one had some practicalities in there, didn't it? It had financial and occupational, because money and work are both, you know, often big features of people's lives. So obviously well-being is going to be intertwined in that. I think also in recent years, the focus on well-being has changed. So what I've noticed in the last 10 years, so a lot of people actually just listening to the eight areas of those wheels I've just read out will be thinking, hang on a minute, there was no mention of diet, because so many people are so big on that. But actually, I'll come back to that and why maybe that's not quite as important as we think. What I do think's happened in the last 10, 20, 30 years is that the focus of well-being, whatever it may have been known as 20, 30 years ago, has shifted. So currently it's very much centered around mental health, and quite rightly so, because mental health is a huge issue at the moment. Food, diet, the microbiome, all of that stuff, which is important, has almost sort of taken a bit of a back seat when it comes to what we need to focus on. And of course, as many of you will know, I'm very much of the opinion that all of these things are tied together. So what's the best way to establish a good culture of well-being where you work or at home or in yourself? Well, I think the very first thing, you know, forget diet, exercise and all the basics that people assume are the cornerstones of well-being. They're important, there's no doubt. The first thing is actually the culture. If you are working somewhere or living somewhere where the culture is toxic or stress levels are high, it's going to be very difficult to enjoy any kind of well-being, whatever the definition of that is. And you can eat the healthiest diet and, you know, run across the South Downs every day, but you won't feel well. So for organisations, it's important, I think, to do some work on values and principles. Where I work, we did some work a while ago and came up with four pillars that we really stand by, which govern everything we do. So they are quality, community, teamwork and respect. Now just think about that for a minute. If you are working somewhere where those four elements are key, A, it makes it a very safe place and space to work, and B, essentially. And secondly, you have to buy into those four things. They are almost part and parcel of the way we work. And if you don't, then, well, you probably wouldn't fit in very well. And although at the moment I've never known general practice to be more busy, and that we are certainly far from perfect as an organisation, I can hand on heart say that it is a happy place to work. It's just that there's too much of it, too much work. We do our best to look after each other, and I think that goes a long way towards creating well-being. So in a way, in my head, this is like a pyramid and that's the base. But if you want to look at the well-being wheel, you could call this environment. So once you've got your culture, the next thing is about behaviours within that culture. And one thing that's really important to do is to check in with people. Just ask them how they are. Seems like common decency, doesn't it? But we work in such a fast-paced world that doesn't happen in a lot of places, certainly from what I hear. But it really makes a difference. You know, just inquiring about how someone is means that, you know, you're taking an interest in them. And it's more than just, oh, are you okay? Because that's not enough in my book. You know, you need to kind of know, find out a bit about their lives and actually take an interest. And, you know, part of well-being is about being human. And these basic things, you know, we're animals that communicate and are used to communities. So let's really try and create that as much as possible. And I guess that could be an area of the wheel called community. And it doesn't have to be at work. It could be from park run. It could be from, you know, a particular group that you identify with. But work, we tend to spend a lot of time at work. So that's an important one. So far we've got culture, and then we've got behaviours that fall out of that. So I'm going to go off on one of my famous tangents here, because my brain works in such a non-linear way. I always sort of think of other things as I'm talking about one thing. And what I've just thought about are two things. Firstly, Emmy Werner's work. So if you listen to the episode on resilience, you'll know that she did some research on a group of children from an island called Kauai, which is part of Hawaii, and looked at certain factors that made them particularly resilient. So have a listen to that one, because what you're seeing there is almost well-being in reverse, in that those children that had features of resilience actually had good well-being. The second thing is about the work of Bill Lucas and Guy Claxton, who are both professors of education, they're very much in the mould of the late Ken Robinson, who I believe still has the most watched TED talk of all time. And one of the studies that they cite in their book, Educating Ruby, is about a group of people who had left school within the last 3 years and what they wished they had been taught. In many ways, what they thought would prepare them for life. And it's fascinating. They wish they'd been taught how to create good relationships, about finances, about simple organisational and business skills. Now, you're probably thinking, what has this got to do with well-being? Well, quite a lot, because if you don't have a certain toolkit that you're able to use, and I, you know, in a way I hate jargon like toolkit, but you know what I mean, if you don't have the minerals for certain things, then you're going to struggle, and that struggle leads to anxieties. And I think one other important aspect of well-being is kind of, you know, some sort of gap analysis, where you kind of think, what resources do I need to make life easier for myself? I'm not talking about stuff that costs loads of money, or, yeah, certainly not talking about having a private chef at home or anything like that. What I'm talking about is the basics. And actually, the first well-being wheel I mentioned had learning in it. And I think, you know, when you're a child, you think adults know everything, but actually we know that's not the case, don't we? That we're all learning lifelong. So there's something about keeping up to date, learning, staying current, that is, in my humble opinion, related to well-being. Apologies, I do love the odd digression, but let me get back to the point. So it started, remember, because a friend of mine was asking about how they can make well-being easier at work, and how well-being and actually being aware of well-being can cause stress in itself. So I touched on learning, but that's more about staying current and up to date. But what about personal growth or purpose? I was talking to someone locally who runs a shop, and he was saying how he doesn't really know what he's doing anymore, because his kids have grown up. They're on their own 2 feet. They've got great jobs. Neither is settled with a partner, but he feels this emptiness, almost like he's got nothing to work for. He's in a very privileged position in some ways, but purpose slash personal growth, I think, is quite key to our well-being. I think in real terms, that means things like creativity or career development, or it could also be, you know, emotional growth in terms of self-exploration. I've had friends who've been on the Hoffman process or joined men's groups, and they found it incredibly helpful and life-changing. Then that brings us on to the obvious, which is lifestyle choices. Now, you know, everyone knows that we're meant to exercise and eat healthily, but we don't do it. And if you go back to my first episode on behaviour change, there are some tips there on how to do these things better if you're struggling with it. Sometimes it's not that simple. And again, from the work of Emmy Werner and the children in Hawaii, there are certain things that program our behaviours as adults, you know, when we are young children. So experiences in childhood and adversity in childhood often lead to what's called the trauma pain addiction cycle. And that can sometimes be why it's so difficult to change our behaviours. We've all got these, and it's a case of being more aware of them. So the lifestyle choices, sometimes it's not a choice. It's not just this. Some people can do it. You know, they can literally just grasp the nettle, as I call it, and just say, right, that's it. I'm not smoking ever again. Or that's it. I've given up drinking coffee, or I've stopped eating cakes, whatever. Great if you can. It's harder for a lot of people. But going full circle, that is made much more easy if you are in the right environment. You know, that culture building is key. And if you're in a compassionate environment, you can even have months or weeks or little groups that actually focus on well-being. You know, perhaps a month on sleep or a month on particular types of healthy cooking or starting a running group together. There is something powerful about groups. Many practices run group consultations if they've got enough staff. And again, that power of community can improve your well-being. So, as I say, all of these things tie in with each other. It's never one thing. So don't think for a minute it's just about what you eat, or it's just about how much you exercise, or it's just about community, or it's just about environment. It's all of these things that give rise to our sense of well-being. I mentioned mental health earlier on and how it's an enormous issue, and certainly in my career I've never seen so much mental health need as I am at the moment. So keeping with the fact that most of us spend quite a lot of time at work, and that stress is a very common feature of working life, I wanted to just share with you something about what's called the cycle of resiliency. It ties in with Emmy Werner's work, but it's actually not by her, it's by Saidi and Said. And this is so interesting. What they say about any particular adverse condition, so if you're faced with something unpleasant or difficult at work, there are three ways that we can respond to that. Either erupting with anger, which I know many people who are like that, thankfully not at work anymore. The second is imploding with negative emotions, where you just cannot react, and that also sounds familiar to me. And the third is just being upset about whatever it is that you're faced with. And the really important thing is that third response of feeling upset is the right one. It's the only one that promotes well-being and is what resilient people do. So you kind of, you know, the first two, being angry or just being overwhelmed with negativity, is not right, because one blames other people and the other one means that you've given in to not being able to cope, as in you're not even open to thinking that you might be able to. And I think in terms of where we're at in the modern world and evolution, the focus on the brain, I've been thinking about this a lot, the brain is neuroplastic. It can change. You can change your thoughts and that will change your feelings. And this is how therapies like CBT often work. Talking of which, actually, Aaron Beck, who's often regarded as the creator of CBT, passed away recently at the age of 100, and I'll post a link to him. But those kinds of therapies and that kind of approach, or anything that changes your ability to think differently and handle things differently, you know, remember what I said about that response to the adverse event, is going to improve your sense of well-being. And then you'll be able to make better decisions about diet, exercise, relationships, community. All of it ties together. So I think in summary, what I would suggest at work is starting with culture, and then adding on all those bits that we've talked about, checking in with people, having team huddles, making sure that you are communicating, sharing, creating a community. You know, a lot of our learning comes from, you know, listening to others talk about what's going on in their life. And again, I direct you to the first episode on behavior change to just remind yourself about how that might work. Anyway, I hope that's been helpful and of some use. What I'd like you to think about is, what are you going to do this week to improve your well-being? And I want you to think really broadly. It doesn't have to be something super specific. It can be if you want. You know, if you think, hey, you know, I want to just change one of my habits, give that a go. But what can you do in your workplace that is a quick win, that is easy, that might just set things in motion? You know, is it a cultural thing? Is there something about the environment that you could change that might encourage well-being, even if it's having, you know, more time as a team, you know, even if it's just sort of checking in with people and seeing how they are? I'd love to hear from you. I'm going to leave you with a quick anecdote. Many years ago, one of my patients was moving away out of the area from where I was practicing at the time. And she had all sorts of symptoms. Her health was a mess. to the point where she was wired and tired, really low, really depressed, very, very anxious. And for about a year, we'd been working through all sorts of areas in her life, movement and diet. And, you know, she was doing her best in terms of relaxation and purpose and all of that sort of stuff. One of the things I'd really not asked her much about was her environment. So she was a freelance designer, I believe. And about a year and a half after she'd moved away, she sent me a message via social media just to say that her life had greatly improved. And although she had felt significantly better by the time she'd left for wherever she lives now, she realised that actually the thing that was making her ill was her partner and the fact that she was in a really toxic relationship. And it was a real lesson for me because all of her symptoms had literally gone away overnight, and then she'd sort of met the love of her life. And, you know, it's really odd because you wouldn't find anything in a medical textbook about that, about, you know, a toxic relationship making someone physically and mentally ill perhaps, but physically, I mean, and it just shows you how many determinants there are when it comes to well-being. So I'm going to leave you with that thought. As I always say, I really, really love hearing from you, the comments that you make on Instagram or Twitter or my Facebook page. They really sort of help me generate ideas for future episodes. And also it means that you can take part in this as a conversation, because this is all very one way, isn't it? So please let me know about your well-being tips or things that have worked where you work or at home. Meanwhile, do take care. And in the meantime, may you enjoy the very best of health.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.